FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.
Welcome, and you are listening to the Financial Survival Network. It's December 4th, 2018. Hey, as always, write us, be a part of the show. Email address kl@carrylutz.com. Well, good friend of the show's on with us now. He has some definite opinions, particularly about the stock market, about cryptocurrencies, about cannabis stocks. His name is Lior Gantz. You find him at wealthresearchgroup.com. Lior, welcome back to the show.
Hey, Carrie. Thanks for having me back.
As always. So you've got some interesting things, interesting takes on things going. What is going on in the world right now as you see it?
Well, we just had a G20 meeting. G20 summit. I think what was very interesting in the G20 is that usually, Kerry, they have a draft of the consensus points, everything that all the members countries are agreeing to. They have that drafted few months in advance. Before. No, they don't release it until after, but they make sure that each one of the member countries agree to it, that that's the posture and the points that they want to get across to Reuters and to Associated Press, etc. This time it was drafted during the conference. So they can reach an actual unified, unilateral point and theme for this conference. And this shows you how the BRIC countries, which is obviously Brazil, Russia, India, China, and South Africa, how they are trying to take the world, not trying, they are taking the world to a different place, to a different future. And on the flip side, I think the United States recognizes that they are in rebuilding mode, in reinvention mode, that they need to adapt 21st century realities, because not in the not too distant future, China will surpass the GDP of the United States. The United States is a quarter of the world's economy. That's massive. It's, mm-hmm. it's really big. But China has come to a point where it's now 15%. And that's mm-hmm. insane. So two countries are responsible for 40% of the world's economic activity. And you add Japan and Germany to that, and those four alone are just about 60% of the world's economy. So four countries out of 200, they make everything and produce and service, etc. So all the countries of the world are servicing these four beasts, basically, and get served by them. And those four will continue to dictate what's going to happen in the next 10 years. But with China aligning on this One Belt, One Road initiative with many countries, that is essentially a war. It's a cold war, but it's a war because they're diverting resources, diverting troops, diverting alliances, diverting everything. And on the flip side, you see President Trump, the administration in the U.S. trying to combat this with building a new future for the United States, because they know that in the next few years, the role of the dollar will continue to decline. In fact, if you go to wealthresearchgroup.com/drama and /attack, I wrote two incredibly important reports on this subject of how the world is de-dollarizing and why this is so important. Because in 2018, the dollar, up until a week ago, was the best performing asset on the planet. And that is very rare for a fiat currency to do that. It means that, you know, all the hedge funds, all the hedge fund managers could have gone on a sabbatical for 2018, have gone to the movies, and their clients would have been better off. And it's very rare. It hasn't happened in over 100 years where a fiat currency leads the way. And 90% of asset classes globally, not just the U.S., if you take bonds globally in emerging countries, in Europe, etc., it's all negative for 2018. If you remember, 2017 was all about indulgence. S&P 500, the NASDAQ, the Dow, cryptocurrencies every single month on very low volatility. They went up substantially. And in 2018, with the announcements of the tariffs, basically at the start of the year, and with the Federal Reserve leading the quantitative tightening, while other central banks like the ECB and the BOJ, the Bank of Japan, not doing the same thing, the dollar has enjoyed basically this squeeze in liquidity for it, which has allowed it to become a very strong currency compared with other ones. And the tariffs have made bonds and stocks look unattractive in the meantime. So fiat currencies have prevailed in 2018. This is very important because in 2019, you can look for a cyclical top for the US dollar as the ECB, which is the European Central Bank, and the BOJ, which is the Japan Central Bank, look to start tightening themselves. And they will look, the euro and the yen will start looking better relatively to the dollar. So you can look at dollar weakness. Dollar weakness means a lot to oil prices, a lot to silver prices. You can already see gold starting to move. In the last 2 days, it's gone from about 1,200 to 1,240 as we're doing this interview. And I think the main theme is what nobody's talking about. But Kerry, I did mention this in an interview 2 days ago, and I'll let you know that this is something very important. Jerome Powell, I know everyone talks about the fact that he said that that interest rates are far from being normal, and then changed his stance just a few days ago to they're very close to normal, which is another way of saying we're going to stop hiking interest rates very soon. But I don't think that everybody has paid attention to another quote that he gave last Wednesday, and that is that he said, "I think we finally found a way." That's a direct quote. "We finally found a way to keep the economy robust, unemployment very low, inflation tamed, and I think we cracked that equation of keeping the economy robust with low unemployment and low inflation." And that is very troubling for a central banker to say that he's cracked and engineered a way to keep inflation low while unemployment is very low. And to say that with such confidence, that gives me the concern that they're not watching inflation in the right way. And then he added to it the very essence of globalist agenda. He says, while we're doing this, while we are going to keep inflation low and unemployment very low, Kerry, he said we're going to keep wages stagnant.
So Powell's actions are very significant, aren't they? But how can they be that smug, that arrogant, to believe that they've effectively cracked the code for consistent monetary growth, consistent growth of the money supply, no inflation, economic growth, and wages stay stable? Isn't that arrogant?
And not only that, but what I really think is important is that he wants wages to be stable. Now, people want wages to go up. You know, the average person, he wants better wages. He doesn't want a stagnant wages. He doesn't want to get all of his value outsourced to cheap labor countries. He doesn't want to get replaced by robotics or by automation. He wants to be able to make more money every single year, because even though they want to keep it at low inflation, they want inflation to be out there. So you need to beat inflation. So what they're basically telling you is, we want an economy that has very low savings rates, and we want everyone to invest in something. Mm-hmm. Want everyone to be invested. And I think that is something that is not healthy for an economy like the U.S., where you have about half of the people that can scrub $400 together for a medical emergency. And that is a recent stat. So it goes back to what Warren Buffett said in the last Berkshire meeting. And he said, look, with inflation at 2.5% and a 10-year bond at 3%, the government clearly doesn't want your money. They want you to go into the stock market. They want you to go into real estate. They want you to generate capital gains tax so that they can pay for all the obligations. And this, goes into the next important subject that I see in the world, and that is the rise of populism. You can see that in Paris right now, what's going on. And that's just the start of what I think will happen, because governments, they always project budgets according to the best case scenario. So for 2019, the U.S. is already projected to have a $1.3 trillion deficit in their budget, which is just remarkable when you think about it, right? It's just the interest on that is about madness. $1.5 billion a day. So $1.5 billion a day just goes to interest. Then you have in recessions, obviously, you have more income security to pay, more unemployment benefits, less tax receipts from corporations, less capital gains from the stock market. And I just think that the U.S. will find it hard to fund all of this with foreigners' money as they have. The U.S. is the only country in the world where 40% of everything that the government pays for is funded by other countries. So just imagine how warped that is, that the U.S. government pays its troops, pays the gasoline for all the tanks, the planes, everything like that, and the funder is Japan or China or the creditors. And same thing with all of the Medicare and Medicaid. The tax receipts are just not enough to pay out everything that the U.S. Government has promised. And there's going to be a major event surrounding this during the election cycle, because it looks to me like the U.S. will need to start printing currency outright, which is even more, which is directly inflationary. This is not issuing a bond and selling it to the Federal Reserve. This is actually printing currency, adding to the money supply just outright. And this might happen if foreigners will stop coming to the auctions, and they have been. Japan is already back to 2011 levels for treasury debt. Russia has liquidated 86% of their treasury debt. China has not bought, has not increased their treasury debt in several years. And this is very, very, it's a unique situation. And obviously, it's caused in part by the fact that Donald Trump is in a state of renegotiating everything. And when you renegotiate, people take a step back and they think about what they have done thus far. So I think it's a very interesting time. And I am really looking at silver as one of the most important assets to own in 2019 if it breaks out, because it's the most inversely correlated to the U.S. dollar. And for the U.S. dollar to be the top performing asset of a calendar year is very rare. And it obviously will indicate a reversion to the mean at some point.
So, but you know, what about the fact that the Chinese, as quick as they make their fortunes, they're getting it the hell out of China. They're coming to the U.S. They're investing in the U.S. And you know, you've got this flight capital because there's no rule of law, reliable rule of law in China. You got the social credit scoring now. They keep tightening the noose on the people, and the Chinese will always find a way to get their money out of China and out of harm's way.
I couldn't agree more. Look, the United States, and I've said this many times, it's a tale of two economies. If you go to wealthresearchgroup.com/portfolio, and you'll see what I'm doing personally in my own portfolio, you'll see that the U.S. for me is number one. It's still the number one country in the world, but it's just declining. The gap that it used to have over other countries is declining, but it's still number one. The government is in huge trouble. Washington is in huge trouble. A $21.6 trillion federal deficit, a federal debt is unbelievable. But for corporate America, if you go down the list of the Fortune 500 companies, the S&P 500, there are just incredible companies out there growing at 10 to 15 to 20% a year. I mean, just imagine Google is a company that grows faster than Warren Buffett's company at its record days. So just imagine how unique that company has been. Now, I don't invest in Google right now, but since the IPO over 10 years ago until today, that has been a machine that cranks out a 20% growth every year. It's just insane. And there are many companies like that. And I think people need to understand that America has incredible entrepreneurs, a very, very robust business, corporate America. And I think that also with what you're saying, that is very important, because many U.S. corporations are now getting most of their income from Asia, from the developing world, from emerging markets. So just to give you an example, a company like Starbucks, it opens a branch in China every 15 hours. That's amazing, remarkable.
Really?
In the U.S., there are 14,000 Subways and about 4,000 McDonald's and 4,000 Starbucks. And their agenda is to get 4,000 branches in China as soon as possible. So, and they're a long ways from doing that. McDonald's, which is an American icon company, right? 65% of its income comes from Europe and Asia. So yeah, there are many companies that already understand this shift. And that is why a country with about 5% of the world's population cannot sustain a situation where they're a quarter of the world's economy if they don't find ways to become productive. And in the U.S. right now, productivity is derived from having HQ. So companies have their headquarters in the U.S. and have their brains in the U.S. They're paying the highest salaries to U.S. personnel. But most of the manufacturing and a lot of the servicing is outside the U.S. And I think many people that are now millennials and are 20 to 30 to 35, they will find themselves in a situation where they will probably have to be displaced at some point in their career two or three or four times and change the way that they work. So I think in the U.S., it's going to be one of the first countries that goes over the hurdle. They're not going to be called a developed nation anymore. There's going to be a new term for what happens in the U.S. because they have grown so rapidly and to a point where it's a 70% service economy, and therefore there aren't many manufacturing jobs, and you need to find yourself in this 21st century doing something, right? So the professions that are going to emerge are going to be professions that might be a merge of government and private partnership. And I'll give you an example. There's already many initiatives by the U.S. government to go into distressed zip codes throughout America and revive them, because that's where the potential is. That's where the opportunity is, to revive places where people have they don't finish high school and they don't have a lot of jobs, etc. Now, the way you create the situation is you incentivize private businesses or publicly traded companies to go into these areas. The first thing you do is get the banks to open branches there and start lending and start the business cycle. So right now, JP Morgan is going into many distressed areas in the United States, and they're open banking branches. And you're going to see a lot of that private and private companies with the government's help going into areas. It's going to be something that's going to be very big in the next decade. It's going to be called private public partnerships, and you're going to see a lot of that. And that's how the U.S. is planning to get more people into the business cycle and more people out of minimum wage jobs, because that's right, the real problem, the wealth gap inside of the United States, where you see people living in $20 million homes, and then right outside of that, you see someone on the street. And that's very bad for any economy, in any country. And it warps elections. It changes everything. And there's a lot of impression management. The rich need to make the impression that they're not that rich. The poor need to make the impression that they're really poor in order to get more benefits. It's just not a legitimate, honest country. And it's going to be a major theme, obviously, in the next election cycle.
Absolutely. All right. Well, hey, that's it for now. Lior, just tell us again the site and where we get these reports. I think they're real important and can be extremely helpful.
Sure. Today I mentioned wealthresearchgroup.com/attack, which is all about the de-dollarization and how other countries are making war against the U.S. dollar, slash drama, wealthresearchgroup.com/drama. And this is about internal division within the United States and what that can do and how vulnerable it leaves the U.S. to attacks from the outside. I'm talking about cyber attacks and economic attacks, not all-out war. Mm-hmm. Slash portfolio. So wealthresearchgroup.com/portfolio is my own personal portfolio. And I know many people have asked how I prepare in bear markets for gold and silver. So I did create a report on that. You can go to wealthresearchgroup.com/bear, and that's 11 bear market strategies. If you want everything in one screen, that's wealthresearchgroup.com/top, just T-O-P, and you can see everything, just everything we've okay. ever published in terms right. of a special report that's downloadable. It's a great week in read. And obviously the newsletter on the homepage, if you subscribe to that, it's just the best way to get my most updated research, because that's the top quality, highest priority ideas emailed mm-hmm. to you.
All right. Excellent. Hey, and we'll have a link in the show notes as always. Email your questions, comments, kl@kerrylutz.com. And Lior, great talking with you. Sorry the quality at times wasn't as good as we strive for, but you're all the way on the other side of the world and the land down under. So hopefully next time we talk to you, we'll get a better connection. Anyway, be well, my friend.
For sure. Thank you very much.
FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get 3 free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.